Okay. So last night we began a discussion of how to focus on restfulness within your body. And I gave you a way to mentally label that. And what was the label phrase? Tell me.
Feel rest.
Feel rest, right. So you can find rest in your body. You can also create rest in your body. So I distinguish those two. Finding rest means there's a restfulness that's already there. You don't have to make it happen. It's there. One part of the restfulness that's already there is when you settle into a posture, either seated or standing, lying down. Whenever you settle into a posture, your face gets smooth, your jaw drops a bit, your arms are limp and loose, your hands are heavy, your legs are not working, unless you happen to be standing, but for seated or lying down. So that means that your limbs automatically have a little bit of looseness, relaxation. So that's in your five limbs. We'll count this as a fifth limb. What happens in the core of your body? Well, if you pay close attention, you'll see that if you just let the breath go naturally, on the in-breath, these muscles here and this muscle here, we call this the diaphragm, and these are the intercostal muscles, the ribcage muscles. On the in-breath, those muscles contract. They work. They pull the ribcage up. These muscles pull the ribcage up. And the diaphragm also contracts, and it pulls down like this, and that opens. What happens on the out-breath? Well, those muscles just relax. It's part of the physiology. And gravity and the tissue elasticity, the stored energy, that is mostly what does the out-breath for you. So it's subtle, but you may be able to tune in to the fact that this core of your body automatically relaxes on the out-breath. And that can also spread relaxation broadly. From this area, it could spread to include your whole body. So when I say find relaxation, I mean tune into the fact that the stillness of your posture causes your limbs at least somewhat to be relaxed, and that in the core of your being, on each out-breath, there's a natural tendency for a relaxation. So that's to find relaxation. And relaxation is one form of body rest, one way to feel rest. Now, you can also create relaxation. How can you create it? Well, you could intentionally drop your jaw a little bit. You could intentionally drop your shoulders. Some people find that if they intentionally slow down the out-breath a little bit, that tends to produce a more restful experience. Now, these are options. They're not requirements. I said you can. I didn't say you have to. You can create relaxation in your body if you wish. So it's a combination of finding the relaxation, meaning detecting that it's already there, and creating the relaxation by intentionally relaxing body parts, or perhaps intentionally slowing the out-breath without straining, by some combination of finding and or creating relaxation in the body. You can have a continuous focus on feel rest. There are other types of restful experience in the body. For example, anyone here ever have a strong emotion? Now, we need everybody in this class to raise their hand. If you're not raising your hand, you don't deserve to be in this class because you're not a human being if you've never had a strong emotion. So when you had a strong emotion, where did you experience that emotion? Did you have some mental talk? He said this, she said that, I'm going to do this. Maybe you had some mental talk. Did you have some mental picture? Oh, this happened, I should do this, that happened. How many people have ever had a mental picture? So your mental talk and your mental picture, that's thinking. You have auditory thinking, you have visual thinking. But when you had that strong emotion, did you only have mental picture and mental talk? Or did something happen in your body when you had strong emotion? How many people notice something happens in your body when you have strong emotion? Okay. So then at some point that strong emotion disappeared. And you didn't have those images, those mental images, you didn't have that mental talk. And your body once again became emotionally peaceful. So most people don't notice when their body becomes emotionally active. Most people don't notice when their body becomes emotionally peaceful. But you can have an absence of emotion in your body can be experienced as a kind of tranquility, another form of feel rest. How many people have ever had the experience when you're sitting that it seems like part of your body's not there? Or maybe your whole body is just not there. It's absent. How many people have had that kind of experience? That's another kind of feel rest. It's like there is no sensation, no physical sensation. So there's a whole bunch of things that are an experience that are in the body and are restful. The local relaxation in the core of your body as you breathe out, the relaxation in your limbs associated with just being still and settled. That's all feel rest. If you're aware that your body has no emotion in it, that neutrality, that's another form of feel rest. And then an awareness that there is no sensation, or maybe sometimes that your whole body isn't even there, that's also feel rest. So there's a wide range of sensory experiences that we can note as feel rest. So let's do a little bit of that, and then we'll have some questions. Take a moment to stretch up and settle in. And tune into the restfulness within your body. You can find restfulness just in the relaxation of being still, or in the relaxation of the out-breath. You can also create restfulness by intentionally relaxing parts of your body. Some people find if they relax into the out-breath, it naturally wants to slow. And then the more they slow it, the more relaxed they become. Find and or create rest within your body. Every few seconds, bring your attention back to that. In order to aid the process, every few seconds, at your own pace, for some slower, for some faster, you can make the mental label "feel rest." To remind yourself that's what you're focusing on. As you do this, non-rest will become evident. You'll have mental pictures. You'll have mental comments. You'll have physical and emotional sensations in your body. Totally allow that to occur. We're not trying to get rid of any of that. But we are emphasizing, focusing on the restful qualities of the body. Physical relaxation, emotional peace, absence of sensation. Any of these can be noted as feel rest. Feel rest, maybe not intense. It might just be a hint. That's perfectly okay. Non-rest, maybe very intense. That's okay. Give permission for non-rest to arise. Sometimes the more you focus on rest, the more acutely aware of non-rest you become. That's okay. That's part of the releasing process. By bringing your attention back to feel rest. you're gradually developing concentration power. Like lifting a weight, each repetition builds strength. You're also developing sensory clarity. In this case, the ability to detect body rest, something that happens all the time, but usually people aren't clear about it. Now you're developing clarity about restful states. You're also developing equanimity. By giving permission for non-rest to do whatever it wants. The mind, body, if it wants to be agitated, fine. That's just sensations. That's just mental pictures and mental talk. Let it happen. Don't need to fight with it, but don't need to hold on to it either. By letting non-rest come and go without push and pull, you're developing the quality of equanimity. Now, we're going to continue to focus on feel rest. But we're going to increase the challenge level, make it a more challenging exercise, which will, of course, build more strength. Continue to note feel rest. Using mental labels. But I would like you to open your eyes. Eyes open, but awareness back in your body. This may be something you're not used to, meditating with your eyes open. Since our emphasis is on rest, you don't particularly look at anything. You just sort of open your eyes and defocus or soft focus. Look through things, not at them. And keep your awareness back on the body, experiencing somewhere to some degree, even if it's only a little location and subtly, feet continue to contact, feel rest with your eyes fully open. Now, in a moment, we're going to transition from formal practice to practice in life. That means we're going to be talking, interacting. But just because we talk, interact, even think, it doesn't mean that we have to lose mindful awareness. As a result of the focus that we just did, there may be some tranquility or some increase in energy or happiness. There may be some taste of being concentrated. There may be some taste of being sensorially clear. There may be some taste of equanimity, gentle matter-of-factness, openness. If so, stay with that, those positive effects. They don't have to evaporate just because we move to a more ordinary situation. Good. Okay. Now we're going to open it up for any report that you would like to make or any questions. questions that you would like to ask about what we've done so far. Yes.
Yesterday it was almost, if I can say it, a rapture, mental orgasm. I was immediately sucked into complete silence that wasn't method, it was total movement. And I just floated in it. I wasn't prepared for it at all, and I just let it go. And it was an instant and yet a continuous experience, and I was totally awake. And today, the word is serenity. I can feel a core within that is moving. Yesterday there was no center as a sense, you know, it was all wavy. Today there is a definite core that pulsates both ways, and as I said, the only word that I have is it's very open situation, as if I have no frame whatsoever, and yet there is a center, and it's very serene. I have been following your work since the 90s. We even met over the phone. But mainly in relation to pain. The difficult emotion takes that I had and addressing pain. I have never done this sort of exercise, and it's amazing that I haven't done it, and it's also amazing in terms of what benefit I see now in locating myself or addressing myself or moving myself towards restful place in relation to pain. I've never done it. I always and moved towards pain, dissected it as you address it. But I've never just done the opposite, and it's an amazing effect.
Excellent. Essentially, when we have a challenge in the body with pain, or in the mind with confusion, or in the mind and body with emotion, when we have a challenge, there are two basic strategies that you can apply. One is turn towards the challenge. And I'm sorry, can you remind me what your name is?
My name is Talma.
Talma.
Yeah.
Yes, I recall our interactions. So as Talma said, do you know what Talma means in Korean? In Korean it means Dharma. Yeah, that's how they pronounce Dharma in the Korean language, Talma. So that's a good name, huh? If you're in Korea, are you planning to go? So, as Talma said, you can turn your attention towards the challenge, and you can divide it into small pieces, so that instead of multiplying together, they just add. And that leads to a kind of freedom. And you've practiced that. You report that you've successfully practiced that. But she had never practiced the opposite strategy, which is to turn away from the challenge onto something that is either pleasant or anchoring or positive in some way. But that's also a legitimate strategy. People tend to think that, oh, I don't want to turn towards discomfort because that's going to make it worse. But people also think, oh, I don't want to turn away from discomfort because that's denial and suppression. So if you there's only two ways you can turn, okay? On a line, you either go to the right or the left. There's no other possibility. So when you have a challenge, when you meditate in that challenge, there's two ways you can turn. You can turn towards it and break it up into small pieces. And I've described that in my manual, focus in, focus out, that kind of thing. Or you can turn away from it, focus on a restful state, or intentionally create positive thoughts and emotion in your body. Or you can anchor yourself in sights or sounds. And what's wonderful is that you now have flexibility. You realize that you can learn by turning towards it, but you can also learn by turning away from it. Of course, with the pain issue that you have, if you had not done the turn towards, you probably would not have had the delicious experience that you just described. So they work both ways. So why can you learn from either one? Because either strategy develops the same core skill set. You're learning how to concentrate. Concentration means you say that right now I want to focus on this thing. And a minute later, maybe you want to focus on this other thing. It could be something small, it could be something large. Concentration power is your ability to focus on what you want when you want. That is a very, very important skill for human beings. All other skills depend on concentration skill. You want to learn to play a musical instrument, you want to learn sports, you want to, if you want to learn something academic, if you want to have a satisfying experience of praying or a satisfying experience of making love with another person, all of those require concentration power. So if you have a challenge and you turn your attention away from it, well, of course, that challenge pulls you, right? It pulls you. Then you come back to focusing on the restful state. You're developing a concentration strength. You're saying, I want to stay concentrated on restful state now. So you're developing concentration. On the other hand, if you have a pain and you want to penetrate that pain with awareness until it dissolves into energy, then now your concentration power is just on that pain. You're saying, I'm going to focus just on that. So you're developing the same skill, whether you turn away from the challenge or whether you turn towards the skill of concentration. Then you can decide for your whole life where you want to stay focused, and everything becomes very interesting. You're also developing a sensory clarity skill. You learn to detect two things, actually. You learned how to detect this restful state, but you also learned how to detect the energy, the flow, the qi, they call it in Chinese. But in Buddhism, we call it anicca, impermanence. And I guess you could call it a kind of ruach or a chaya in some of the traditional Jewish formulation, a kind of energy. You found within the restful state that, was it like a vibration?
It was pulsating, it was the expanding and contraction, six waves of them, which I've never experienced. It was waving, it was as if somebody took, you know, material and dissolved it. It was like edges were disappearing. And it was also bubbly.
Bubbly, yes. There are many flavors of energy. Some of them are like little bubbles, or like, like champagne bubbles, or like rain falling on a pond. And then there's more wavy kind of energy. And then the deepest of all is that expansion contraction, the experience of expanding out to infinity and collapsing down to nothing at the same time in all six directions at once. And that is absolutely the classic experience of Bhanga, B-H-A-N-G-A. You can look it up on the internet. There comes a time in your practice where things aren't solid anymore, and we call it Bhanga or dissolution. And the formulation for that my own teacher, Sasaki Roshi, who is a Japanese Zen master, uses, he talks about expansion and contraction. And you experience that. And that's excellent. You experienced flow within the restful states. All of this, what we're talking about, flow, expansion, contraction, and so forth, there is a detailed description in that manual that you have been looking at, that we sent you and that is out there. So you read the book. We have an expression in American English. I don't know if you've heard this. You read the book, now you see the movie, okay? Except it's different. You read the book, now you're living the movie. You're actually experiencing what you read about in the book. So, Dove Mayo? Yes?
I would like to know the direction.
A little louder, please.
I would like to get some guidance for the walking meditation.
Okay, very good. Guidance for walking meditation. In my own particular approach to meditation, I don't have any special way to meditate when you walk. At my retreats, whatever techniques people do when they're seated, they can do when they're walking. So I just think of walking meditation as practice in motion. So you have practice in stillness, you may have several things that you do, different practices you do while you're sitting, then to learn to maintain that same practice while you're walking is closer to life, closer to daily life. So I don't have any special meditation for walking. Rather, I think of walking and working and exercising and eating as a situation that's more challenging, but a situation where you apply the same technique as during sitting. So if you're focusing on rest while seated, you could do the same thing while walking. That's my own approach. Now, that there are so many kinds of meditation that people can do, we can talk about each one of them individually. How do you do it while walking? But is that a sufficient answer to your question? Okay, good. Yes, back there.
I have a question about changing. When I came here, I'm used to doing
you have something that is working for you, would you try change, play with it, or would you just stay with it?
Is the breath meditation working for you? In general, if you find something that works, that's good, and you stay with it. But I also encourage people, at least occasionally, to try other approaches. For one thing, when you try another approach, that's a good way to test your practice. The way I like to look on practice, when you do anapana, which is the breath meditation, you're not really learning how to focus on the breath. You're learning how to focus. You're learning a generic skill. So if you if that's really working for you, one way to test it is to try some other technique and see, can I concentrate? Can I have equanimity with the distractions? Can I bring clarity to this other thing? If you're developing concentration, clarity, and equanimity on breath, then you should be able to bring those same qualities to any other sensory experience. So I encourage people, at least occasionally, try some other technique to test your practice. So that's what I would say about that. Because it's easy to get into a habit groove where you're not really developing general skills, you're just developing a specific skill. So the way to test if your skill is general is try other techniques. You should eventually, if a person tells me, I've been meditating successfully on the breath for 40 years, let's say. Well, 40 years is a long time. I would expect that person would be able to do any other meditation technique immediately without any difficulty. If you meditate on your breath for 40 years and you can't instantly do any other technique, then you haven't learned general skills, and that's a problem. So people that do a lot of noting, how do you know that it's working? Well, you should be able to do nothing, to just sit. People that do nothing, that just sit, how do you know it's working? Well, you should be able to note without resistance or difficulty. So I would say to test your practice as a compass or a barometer to know where you're at with the breath, try other things. Yes.
I noticed that yesterday I had much more difficulty concentrating, focusing. Today I actually had an easier time, and also the relaxation feeling gradually became much more pleasant. It was like a pleasant feeling slowly starting to expand through my body.
Excellent. In general, okay, the question, yes, good. I always forget, I should repeat questions. Also, though, when you ask questions, yell it out loud. okay, so it was a little harder concentrating yesterday. Today, it's easier and more pleasant, essentially, is what you were reporting. So I will tell you that there are many ways to think about meditation. One way to think about meditation is it's exercise, okay? It's like physical exercise. And so what happens when you exercise? Well, when you exercise, you get strong, but sometimes you also get tired. But then you get what we call a second wind, and you're not tired anymore, okay? You're aware of, now I'm stronger, okay? but then you get tired and then you feel stronger. So if you do many days of meditation, or even during one day of meditation, sometimes you might drop a little deeper, and that's good. But then other times you get tired, and it's like, oh, I can't get back to that. Okay, that's okay. You just keep practicing. It's like when you run in nature. Sometimes you run up a hill, sometimes you run down the hill. Then you go up a hill, then you go down. But you're getting strong all the time. So one pattern is, like you say, oh, it was a little harder yesterday, now it got easier. Good. Okay. You're aware of being stronger. However, don't be disappointed if it gets a little harder again. Okay. You just try your best. You're not doing anything wrong. That's just the natural pattern. Of course, with time, on average, you tend more and more to have those deep experiences. But that's like a trend over a long period of time. And so it's sort of like it's easier, it's harder, it's easier, it's harder, it's easier, it's harder. But if you look at the big picture, it's getting easier and easier exponentially. Okay, so the growth pattern, locally, you're aware of a lot of fluctuations. But if you back up and look at what's going to happen over the months, years, and decades of your life, if you look at the big picture, you don't see so much those local fluctuations. You see what's called an exponential growth curve, which means the more you grow, the faster you grow. But that's the big picture. Locally, the small picture, it's like, I'm getting it, I'm not getting it. I'm getting it, I'm not getting it. I'm getting it, I'm not getting it. And it's very hard to believe the big picture at the beginning. And the beginning of your practice is probably your first 10 years. Okay. Well, we want you to do this your whole life, right? This is a lifelong endeavor. So at the beginning, you see, oh, I'm getting it, I'm not getting it. This is working, it's not working. The small picture is very strong, okay? But then after you get experience, you see, okay, at first the growth was slow, but now it's just taking off like a snowball, okay? So it's good that you notice some deepening, but don't be disappointed if in 2 or 3 days it gets hard again, okay? But then it will get even deeper after that. Good. Yes?
My question is kind of related to the question about the breathing breath practice. I also have an established practice of a noting practice, and I'm trying to follow your instructions and finding that my mind has a tendency to tack little things onto the end of feel rest, like feel rest in my legs or feel rest in the breath. And I'm aware that I'm kind of maybe mixing practices here. And I guess my question is whether I should be kind of forcing my mind to just use that one label, or whether it's okay that I'm kind of getting a suffixes on the end.
Yes. Excellent question. So I'll repeat. And if I fail to repeat, remind me. The question was, okay, I'm noting feel rest, but I have a natural tendency to want to put in more detail with the mental label, either to label where the restful sensation is, you know, it's in my breath, it's in my face. Sometimes people are drawn to label the kind of rest, you know, the different quality of rest. So what you're describing is what I would call subdividing. You're taking the generic category, feel rest, and you're dividing it either by location or by quality and so forth. And the question is that okay within the system that I'm teaching? And the answer is yes, it's totally okay. That's an option. If you wish to, and that's true in general for the way I teach noting, I'll teach a generic label, like feel in, for for emotion. But then if you want to further subdivide it, you can if you wish, but it's not required. So, yeah, each system of meditation has an internal consistency. They say, okay, do it this way, do it that way, because of the overall structure of it. So within the context of that particular method, it makes sense to do it a certain way. So within the context of one way of doing mindfulness, it makes sense to focus on your breath here. If you're doing body sweeping, for example, in the Ubakin lineage, it makes sense to focus on the breath here because you're trying to develop a small laser-like attention. But if you're doing the Mahasi method of noting, it makes sense to focus on your breath more in your abdomen because of that way of working. So there's no absolute you should do it this way or do it that way. It's just within a broad context of a certain structure, it makes sense to do it one way versus another. It's more effective or more efficient. So I would say within the context of my system that I call basic mindfulness, you have the option if you wish to subdivide, but it's not a requirement. Yes?
What's the difference between noting and the other one?
Labeling?
Labeling.
Okay, very good. You'll recall that at the beginning, I said that I like to approach mindfulness as a kind of science. To speak more accurately, I think that mindfulness has the potential for becoming as clear and rigorous as science is. I don't think it's there now, but I think it has that potential. I say this because one of the things that's important in science is the definitions of things. Things are defined in a certain way, and initially you don't appreciate it. Why do they define it that way? It seems complicated. It seems subtle. It seems arbitrary. But then later on you realize, oh, okay, there's a very good reason why it was described that way. So different mindfulness teachers describe the noting practice in different ways. And I have my way of describing it. So for me, I distinguish noting from mental labeling or labeling in general. For me, noting represents a sequence of acknowledge, then focus. Okay, acknowledge means you detect. You detect that a certain sensory category is present. So you acknowledge that this category is present, and then for a brief moment you intently focus on it, and then you note again. Maybe the exact same thing, or maybe something different, depending on the technique that you're doing. So far, the only thing I've actually taught you how to note is feel rest. Later on, I'm going to teach you how to note see rest, hear rest. Last time I was here, 2 years ago, I taught people how to note see in, see out. See in, hear in, feel in. I taught people how to note their mental image and mental talk and their emotional body. Okay, we did other things last time. So there's a lot of possibilities as to how broad or narrow you choose to note. However, whenever you are noting, typically you are acknowledging then focusing. Acknowledge, focus. So during the moment when you acknowledge that a certain sensory category is present, for that moment, you have the option but not the requirement to label that category. Okay? So the label is usually mental. You usually think the label, feel rest. But a label could be said out loud. Okay? Some people even label with their fingers. Like, this is feel in. Okay? Feel in, hear in, see in. See in is your mental image. Hear in is your mental talk. Feel in is your emotional body. So with your fingers, you could note, okay, I'm doing, feel in, see in, okay. So some people even use their fingers to note, that you could do a kinesthetic noting. So, to label, rather. So the labeling is an option on the noting. So the rhythm of acknowledge, focus, that's the noting. During the moment of acknowledging, if you wish to think a label or say a label out loud, you can do so, but you're not required to do so. So when you drive a car, you have option as far as gears go. You can go into first gear, second gear, third gear. But that the option of the gear is not the same as driving the car. The gears are an option on driving a car. So speaking a label or thinking a label is an option on noting in the same way. Does that make sense? The relationship? Good. That's how I like to set it up. So if you find that the mental labels are helpful, use them. But many people report that the mental label gets in the way. In that case, don't mentally label. Just clearly acknowledge and intently focus. However, if you start to get lost in thoughts or you get sleepy, then you can go back to using the labels. Yes?
When I focus on a restful state in the body, it always comes with this mental image of the specific body parts. It also happens with the breath or with any other focus on pain. Every time I focus on the body. But I notice that sometimes if I don't have that mental image, I'm able to be, to have much, much greater concentration. I manage to separate that mental image from the sensation, be just with that sensation. So should I try to take all my energy towards awareness of that sensation, the bodily sensation, and not spread it around with noting and mental images?
Okay, this is a very good question. Whenever I'm aware, I'm going to paraphrase, I'm going to say it in a little different way, but make sure that I accurately represent what you say. So whenever I focus on something in the body, feel rest or a physical sensation, I get a mental picture of that part of the body. But sometimes I have the experience that I just feel that part of the body without that mental picture being there. And when I do that, when that happens, it's in some way more, I can get more deeply into that. So what should I do about the fact that there's all usually a mental image associated with body awareness? First, I would like to ask you, the times when there's not the mental image, is that a spontaneous occurrence? In other words, the mental image just doesn't happen at that time?
Usually, it's rare that it's spontaneous. Usually, I try to maybe occupy image space and maybe somehow create it or imagine the sensation somewhere else, and then it creates a separation. The question is this something, is it good to do that, or maybe I'm doing something wrong?
Okay, the way I like, first I would say to realize that you usually get a mental image associated with a body experience is not a problem. That's actually a good insight. You're getting an insight into how different sensory systems interact. In science, science is about quantifying. Science is about how much of what, when, and where, interacting in what ways, and changing at what rates. And I like to think of mindfulness as being very similar. So when you get an insight that when you get A, you usually get B, that's an interaction that tells you body events tend to trigger mental images. And knowing that is actually a good thing. The next question is, well, what should I do about this? How should I strategize? So here's the way that I like to think about it. You can learn by focusing just on the body sensation, but I wouldn't try to put it elsewhere or manipulate it. I would just focus on the body sensation. So you can learn something by focusing just on the body sensation. You can learn something by focusing just on the mental image, independent of the body sensation. You can learn something by focusing on both at the same time. So my personal strategy is sometimes put the spotlight on the body sensation, but let the mental image be there. You're just not putting the spotlight on it. Other times, put the spotlight on the mental image. Let the body sensation be there, but it's in the background. Other times, spread your awareness so that you can hold both at the same time. You can learn from each of those three. So it's not the case that you need to try to get rid of anything. You might selectively attend to one to become so that you know it deeply, and then you selectively attend to the other so that you know it deeply. And then you expand and attend to both at the same time so you know them as an integrated system deeply. Now, we're not at this retreat going to have time to take you through these exercises, but what I'm describing you can find in the manual, in the Focus In, Focus Out. It talks about this. Ultimately, you want to get to the point where when the body sensation arises, it's a kind of flow of energy. And the mental image arises, it's also a flow of energy. And those two flows of energy are one flow of energy. And that's an integrated experience of mind and body. Okay? But that, you build that piece by piece over a long period of time. Wow, these are advanced questions. Yes. Okay, well, these have been excellent questions. Let's see how our time is. Okay, and then we'll come back from that break, and I'm going to begin to teach you how to see rest.